APAMADA's programmes and facilities are supported through your generosity. Your support really does make a huge difference. You'll find a link for contributions on the website at apamada.org/contribute. Thank you so much.
Welcome back, everyone. Every activity that we are doing, coming in, sitting down, offering incense, starting the computer, moving the cushions, is Buddha's activity. There's nothing but Buddha's activity. We might think of it as ordinary, and in many ways it is, but it's also the thusness or suchness, that life as it is, reality. There isn't another reality. This is it. And so when we speak about forms and the ways that we comport ourselves and what we're doing, it isn't so you'll be a good Zen student. I don't care about that particularly. What I am committed to is helping you realize your own nature as a Buddha and the other's nature as a Buddha in the midst of this bizarre chaos that life is, and the beauty that comes out of that, and to realize it as Buddha's activity, and then to come forward in a way that's wholesome and generous, with some patience, all the qualities that Peg was mentioning this morning, the paramitas, but not in alignment with your idea about reality. What's that? Will I repeat that? I don't know if I can, but what I'll do, Nella, is I will repeat a larger version of it, maybe. I'm just kind of riffing off what I'm feeling right now as we start and just saying what's coming from my heart. That this is the only life you get. This is the reality that we have. This is what we have to work with. And it's not broken. It's complete and whole, even in its brokenness and messed upness that we see at times. All that's true. But if we can meet things as they are and realize everything is Buddha's activity, there's a way in which we participate in that activity in a different way. And we're always participating. We're always participating. Everything you do makes a difference. Maybe one you never know about, or one that's even perceptible. But that's the nature of karma. Every action has a reaction, and it's universal and wondrous and complete. And so what I'm going to start with, aside from what I've already started with, is you know, I don't know about you, but anybody else watch Netflix and Amazon, you know, when they have the recap of the previous episode, this is the recap of the previous episode from this morning. And so that you can catch up, because now we're going to have a little episode, a little, some of them say, so, you know, stay tuned until after and there'll be more, you know, it's like that. So here's just a very, very short. And this is your summary too, see, you know, this morning. So Rujing in China demonstrated to Dogen that enlightenment was boundless and wondrous, and therefore could not be the result of a personal project of self-improvement. It actually couldn't be another object of your mind, created by your mind, by this conditioned being, by your personal activity. So I said a lot about that, you know, and Dogen was like, what? Like, this was what he was seeking. He knew there was a deeper teaching, and Rujing showed him what it was and taught him. And you know how long he spent with Rujing? 2 years. Now, he was a monk for a long time, realized the limits, or felt limits of what he could learn in Japan, which was considerable, made a very dangerous, difficult trip to China. It wasn't a small thing. You didn't just like get your airplane ticket. It was quite dangerous to get there. looked around to see if he could find a real teacher, found one, spent 2 years with him, then had to get back. And by then, he's 28 years old. So Rogier showed him what he had sought. That was his teacher. Now, all the ancestors, Buddha, Bodhidharma, all the other ancestors, he realized from those teachings, they sat Zazen because of their awakening, not to become awakened, because they had faith, they had trust in their own Buddha nature, they sat down and continued for the rest of their lives. Because this thing that they couldn't construct, they could realize and appreciate so profoundly, there weren't any words. So they closed their mouth and they sat up with dignity in the great joy about the possibility of what they had in this practice. And this is true for us, exactly the same. Then I gave some comments on a couple of the paragraphs. So remember, we read them, two different translations. And the first two sentences is the whole of all those teachings. Remember, I said he gives it to you all at the first, but it wasn't what you thought it was going to be. He says the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? He's questioning the very foundation of what people think Buddhist practice is. It's not based on practice and realization. Don't you practice to realize and awaken? It's already basically perfect and all-pervading. Then why don't we say, great, let's have a margarita. Why bother? It's all okay. Because the next paragraph starts with, and yet, if there's a slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. What discrepancy? That's the ant's question, you know? It's like, what do you mean, discrepancy? If there's the slightest discrepancy. And that other translation, it said, the thing is, I like the way that one starts. The thing is, if there's the slightest gap, so now it's gap. Sky and earth are ripped apart. So discrepancy, gap, there's something there that we're not quite sure about. There's some way in which it sounds like, okay, there's something here really good, but I don't know exactly what it is. Everything is all here. This is it. There's nothing else. There's no place else to go. This is what we got to work with. Your nature is that of a Buddha, so we sit down to realize it. And yet, and that and yet is basically what we see. Samsara arrive, all the trouble we make for ourselves and for other people because we don't understand the first part and don't practice it. So we begin to see life in the way that it actually is. So the next paragraph, he begins, that was the recap, by the way. The next paragraph starts, you should therefore cease from practice. So now he says, okay, if that's the deal, then you should cease from practice based on intellectual understanding, pursuing words and following after speech, and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. Body and mind of themselves will drop away, as the one Sandra highlighted, and your original face will be manifest. If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. So we can spend the whole thing just on this. We will basically, in some version, this is like the turning point where he's saying, okay, cease from practice based, I'll say only on intellectual understanding. In other words, you're not going to, your intellect may be great. You might understand the Dharma. You might be able to read these things and elucidate it, but that's not awakening. That's reading the cookbook and knowing it from front to back, but you don't know how to cook. That's instruction. and learn the backward step that turns your light inwardly to illuminate yourself. That does not mean go inside and think about yourself. It doesn't say get the best therapist you can and start reflecting on your neurosis. Turn your light inward, illuminate yourself. That's what it sounds like. What does it mean? Body and mind of themselves will drop away. That doesn't sound like what a therapist would be helping you do, you know, by self-examination, by mindfulness, right? And your original face will be manifest. What the heck is that? Isn't this? If you want to attain suchness, you should practice suchness without delay. So that clarifies it, right? Well, let's start at the end. Suchness. Sometimes it's thusness. The word tatata, in Sanskrit, T-A-T-H-A-T-A. And almost everyone, you've heard the name, the Tathagata, the one that thus comes, the one that is the expression of thusness. Tata is translated like things as they are, not what they are, things as they are. It's not a description of, oh, they're like this, things as they actually are. Each moment, life as it is, the only teacher. Or Suzuki Roshi would do this really cool thing where he would express the relative and the absolute at the same time. He'd say, things as it is, which is closer to deathness. That's really a better English play on the word, things as it is. Yeah, there's these myriad things as it is, the one thing. Manifest like this, form and emptiness. So if you want to attain suchness, if you want to be in accord with things as it is, then practice things as it is. Practice sitting in zazen rather than trying to manipulate. So the essence of zazen is when you stop manipulating your experience in any way whatsoever. Otherwise, we'd ring the bell and say, now 30 minutes of manipulation instead of meditation. But we don't even say that. As you let go of craving, or let's say soften our grip on craving, to be generous, and stop twisting reality to fit your expectations, you begin to find that you kind of come into harmony with things as it is. You're not fighting it, fixing it, trying to get it to be like you want it. And there's joy and there's heartbreak and everything else. That's things as it is also. The alternate translation that I'm using, here's what it says. You should stop chasing understanding through juggling words, like I'm doing. But it's useful, you know? You should stop chasing understanding through juggling words. Allow the external seeking of your mind to collapse upon itself and light up your own nature. I really like that one.
Could you repeat that again?
Yeah. Allow the external seeking of your mind to collapse upon itself and light up your own nature. And I like that translation. It's like it finally, you know, any of you have sat several days in retreats, you know, there's a time when you kind of like collapse on yourself. Sometimes it just is like physical, you know, that it collapses. And then you feel like you can't do another thing, and there's a break and you step outside and it's like glorious because you're not there the way you were before. And you're actualized by the myriad things like Togen talks about. So you should stop chasing understanding through juggling words, allow the external mind, seeking of your mind to collapse upon itself and light up your own nature. Doing this, the body mind will drop through itself spontaneously, revealing your original nature. If you wish to be realized in suchness, immediately practice suchness. If you wish to be realized, if you wish to wake up and know what this is in all of this, then practice suchness, which is basically stopping all the messing with things. And we practice that as best we can in Zazen. Yes, there are names that I don't remember, but I'll make available.
Okay.
In fact, I'll make the entire Sukhan Zazengi available in that translation.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It is, there's a Japanese teacher that I was unfamiliar with and his American disciple, Red Nipmat, and they created this translation. Mm-hmm. So when he makes that turn and says, practice this way, he's giving some instruction about how to attend. Like, attend like this. If everything's okay, and you've got it, and yet you can go astray somehow, how do you orient yourself to be realized in suchness? I like that very much. To realize yourself as a part of everything. And taking the backward step is a great phrase. But don't confuse it with just a self-reflection. It's a little closer to unblending. We talk about it in IFS sometimes. It's a kind of a stepping back, but not stepping back and then away from. It's a stepping back to be intimate with. And that's a big, big, big difference. Because a lot of people will teach this stuff as you want to step back and get rid of the ego. You know, get rid of that stuff instead of stepping back so that you can meet everything. That's the Bodhisattva vow. To meet all the suffering. To meet all the delusion, to walk through every Dharma gate, embody Buddha. That's intimacy, not trying to push away. And the one thing that I think he is suggesting is that we begin to attend to mind or awareness itself rather than all the objects of the mind. And that kind of blows your mind to think about, you know, being aware of awareness itself rather than just the objects of awareness. And the what's the favorite object of your awareness? You. So he then starts meditation instruction. I'm not going to go into this, but that's the next one. For Zazen, a quiet room is suitable. And then he goes into that whole section. So he says, here's the deal. Here's the way you should pay attention. And here's the way to sit to help you wake up in that. I won't go into it, but that first section where it says how to set up everything, there's that great line where it says, Sansen has nothing whatever to do with sitting or lying down. And the alternate translation one says, don't sit to become an awakened one because you can't fabricate a Buddha out of sitting or lying down. Very straightforward. So all of this is saying you sit in order to sit. Don't make sitting into something really special that you can get then attached to as this special thing. And don't make yourself into some kind of special person who's devoted to sitting as you contrast yourself with those other poor souls who don't do that. This is the spirit of sitting. You sit to sit. And as you do, you're embodying. That's why in the Bodhisattva vow, we say Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to embody it, not to learn it, to embody it. And that's what Zazen allows us to do. Okay, that's as far as we want to go. That's just what I wanted to finish up. Any more questions right now? We have more Dharma activity to do with it. Okay.
Definitely. Just back to the discrepancy and the gap. Can you say a plan about
that? Uh-huh. The rest of the retreat will be the response. I'm not trying to dodge you. Here's an entry gate for it. Everything that you think about yourself, And everything you think about them and this whole situation is a gap because none of it is true. But we believe it is. And what's it a gap between? Suchness, thusness, and our personal perception of things. And there's no way around it because that's who we are. That's how it works. That you're going to have that. And knowing that is part of what you wake up to. But things are different if you know that. So it sounds a little circular. Yeah, but there's, we're not going to be teaching the, you had an idea you were going to say.
I was going to say something.
Please do.
Which is, there's a hint about the gap, which is if the least like or dislike arises, heaven and earth are set apart. That's the gate. That's the clue.
Yeah, the least like or dislike. Yeah. That's the grasping, the aversion, and not noticing.
So you were saying to Susan that everything she thinks about herself and the people and the situation is not the truth.
Not the whole truth.
Not the whole truth. Implying that there is something that is the whole truth.
Well, it's complicated. Vasubandhu says there are three natures of mind in the mind-only Yogacara school. There's the imaginary nature, which is the way we see things. You know, everything like you and that rock are not over there. That's in my mind because I'm imagining it. Yeah, there is that. But also, I only know that from experience. I'm not talking about reality. I'm talking about experience. Our experience is imagined. And it's only imagined. There's no other way to have experience except through our senses. So there's the imaginary nature of awareness that we can have this beautiful display. Second quality is the dependent nature. Everything's dependent on everything else, and there isn't any gap. Everything is totally woven in one fabric of this, thusness, suchness, everything. And then there's the complete realized nature where we realize that we all make it up and we have to deal with it with compassion and wisdom, bringing the two together. But see, that's a whole nother retreat.
A different one.
Huh?
A different one.
A different one. But you ask, so let's do something, which I think will encapsulate most of this stuff. And you don't even have to move. So you can just stay right where you are. And those of you online, I hope that if you don't spotlight me, can we see everybody?
Gallery view.
I want to be able to see everyone's faces online. There you go. And you can still see us, right, out here? It's just I'm the same size as everybody else. Great. Wonderful. I just want to take a good look at you first. Okay, here's what I'd like for you to do, everybody. As best you can, I know you guys are moving around, but set yourself up for Zazen, right where you are. You don't have to look at me. And there's something important about taking the posture, isn't there? Because when you're just hanging out, however you are, you're expressing your personal preference. And this is about, I'm going to sit like a Buddha. And whether you're online or whether you're here in the room, let your eyes close softly. And just rest for a moment. Taking this time to settle a bit because we've been talking quite a bit. And as you do, I'd like for you to experiment with something just to get accustomed to it in your own time, whenever you'd like, over the next minute or so. You can open your eyes and let yourself notice what it's like to see. It's even okay to move a little bit, like if you want to like look around a tiny bit, not big time, but look around, see there are people here. And when you're ready, close your eyes again, back and forth. Just get used to it, that you can be settled with your eyes closed. You can also open your eyes and see. If you're online, same thing. You can close your eyes, or you can open your eyes and see people on the screen here in the Zendo. And just notice what it's like to actually realize that you're sitting here with these people and sitting online with all of these people in these various places. If you're in the room, take a glance at the screen if it's easy without too much. Let your eyes close if they're open at the moment, just softly. And I'm going to ask you to open them again in a moment. But first, I'm going to prompt you to make an assumption with your view. And you can open your eyes just for a moment and look and close them again, whatever you'd like, or leave them open, it doesn't matter. But in a moment, when you open your eyes, you're going to see and realize that you're in the midst of these dedicated, wholehearted disciples of the way, completely committed to the Dharma and service of the Sangha. It's either on screen or in this room, it's a gathering of bodhisattvas, wholehearted disciples of the way. And at your own pace, look and see that this is the case. Same people you saw a moment ago, but now hold them in this way. Ah, these amazing disciples of the way. Bodhisattvas committed to the Dharma and to each other. And every now and then you might close your eyes and just check inside, take that backward step. Just notice what's happening. If anything is changing, it might not. Remembering the beautiful thing that Peg sent us about disciples. Really important. Close your eyes if they're open and let yourself just settle with this reality. And in just a moment, I'll invite you to open your eyes again, this time within a different lens, as it were. When you open your eyes, you realize that you're in a convocation of revered masters, overflowing with wisdom and compassion, expressing the essence of humility and peace. When you're ready, just notice that these people on the screen looking out at us or here in the room, these are masters, revered, full of wisdom and compassion, but humble and quiet and present. Again, appreciating what looking in this way does inside to your body, to your heart, your mind. Really see them. Maybe take a moment to close your eyes and integrate what this, how this shapes you to see in this way. And we'll take one more view, one final view. And of course, this time, as you open your eyes, you'll see myriad Buddhas, only Buddhas. Close your eyes. Master, disciple, Buddha, ordinary human. We'll take a little time. So find your group and you can move around, but let me tell you what to do, all of you. Now that you're going to get together, take time, because it gets a little chaotic, you know. So take time to settle back with each other and really see each other and begin to speak from your heart about what it was like to look in these ways and to be seen in these ways. Or maybe it was confused, it doesn't matter. Just help each other use some words to talk about your experience, and with as much curiosity and kindness and interest as you have. And then we'll come back and we'll see what might have happened. Is that okay? Okay, online? Okay.